Today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Cash and Carry Kitchens. Ask the experts about free fitting on all our kitchens. cashandcarrykitchens.ie.
Well, we're staying with this story in a way because you'll remember that last week, within minutes of the shooting of Charlie Kirk, images of the incident were circulating right across social media platforms. They were viewed millions of times. So the question we're asking is, how does that violent and graphic imagery that we may sometimes unintentionally view scrolling online impact our minds and our well-being? Is it desensitizing us? Does it affect us on a deeper subconscious level? And to try to answer those questions, I'm joined in the studio by Brendan Kelly, who's Professor of Psychiatry at Trinity College Dublin. Good morning to you, Brendan.
Good morning.
These are big questions, but really I think it's crossed everybody's mind, particularly in the last week since the shooting of Charlie Kirk happened. How does this affect me when I see something like this on my phone, most likely?
So this affects you greatly. It affects you deeply and often in a prolonged way. We've seen a lot of research in the past decade or so about exposure to this kind of graphic material online and increasingly reality-based material, not necessarily fiction. And we know for some years now that this affects our minds and our bodies. So perhaps the first thing to note is that when we see violence online, our bodies react in a similar way as if we were there ourselves. If you like, we get the heart racing, the breathing might speed up a little bit, maybe perspiring, and it's very similar to if we were there. And if we look at it enough, the effect can be even greater. So, for example, in 2013 at the Boston Marathon bombings, you might recall, this was one of the first such tragedies where there was a lot of online footage, and research showed that people who spent a long time watching this footage had levels of stress and distress that were greater than those of many people who were present at the event itself.
Does it depend on the person who's watching? You know, the level of impact of that on them?
It does to a degree, but it affects everybody. We are all human and we have an awful lot more in common than we think. And a great deal of our response to this material is physiological, by which I mean it is not all in our heads, it is also in our bodies. And while our heads might tell us we're watching something at great physical distance from us, it can feel and our body respond in a very powerful way nonetheless. Now, this might be to do with evolution. For example, we are primed to respond to threat, however vague. So even if it is distant, our bodies get hyped up and we enter this hypervigilant state. And this is not healthy for us to stay in this state for a long period of time.
And of course, people are staying in this state for a long period of time because we're seeing more and more of these images now. There are more freely available online, particularly since censorship and moderation has taken somewhat of a back seat.
Yes, absolutely. So it is natural for us to respond to these things, but it is also natural to stop responding. And what happens now is we enter a spiral where we keep watching the same clips or slightly different ones or a slightly different angle again and again, because that gets fed to us by various algorithms. So there is this amplification of our response and we really struggle. You know, Claire, we as humans, we are hungry for experience, hungry for emotion, and we tend to follow heightened emotion, even if it is negative.
So we're chasing this. That's the whole secret sauce of social media, isn't it?
Yes, it is, because we chase this stress response, even though it's not good for us. You know, we crave the adrenaline that it releases, and it takes considerable effort to step back from that. So in many ways, the trick is to realize you're going to get into this spiral and put in some kind of structure to stop yourself going down that rabbit hole.
I would have thought for many of us, the opposite of that is true, where you're doing self-censorship. You're saying to yourself, I don't want to see that. So you don't pursue the image. You either scroll past it really quickly or you have designed the algorithm unintentionally almost to filter that stuff out.
And many people intend doing that, and that's what they want to do, and that's what they should do. But very often there is a huge divergence between what we know we should do and what our fingers do on the phone, as if they have a life of their own. Mm-hmm. And this is problematic in lots of ways. There's a concept called arousal transfer, which is when you're watching material that makes you agitated, aroused and agitated like that, that energy can be transferred to other things. And it seems we carry this agitated energy with us even after we have stopped scrolling. And this is very problematic. It affects our sleep, it affects our judgment and our well-being. And we end up living in a sort of a hypervigilant state, as if we're on standby for something that we couldn't quite name.
So that's when it starts to influence and impact the interactions you're having in real life with people.
It does. It affects everything. It affects our brains, it affects our hearts, our lungs and our behaviour. So we become more irritable, more likely to argue with people. And that's because we have these surges of cortisol and noradrenaline going on in our bodies as if we are about to enter a fight. We're on standby for something we can't quite define, but we're all keyed up for it.
Well, now we're at the point now where we understand why we've got to look after this, look after ourselves, mm-hmm. because we can't rely on the social media companies to do it for us, quite clearly. So we have to pull back from watching too much of this.
Yeah, we have new responsibilities now that we did not have in previous decades, when there were news editors or people who would decide just how much of this material we saw and what weight it was accorded, say how many minutes on the TV news something was given. We got to decide all that stuff ourselves now, and we're not tremendously good at self-regulating. We do tend to follow the buzz, follow the excitement, and in some cases follow the tragedy. So it is about curating and structuring our engagement with media. That is very, very important. And that means structuring out the time we might spend on social media, having an awareness when we're going down a particularly bad rabbit hole. And above all, for adults, remembering that younger people will do what we do with our phones and with our use of social media. And we have a lot of power to shape the habits of a younger generation as well.
By modelling what we want them to do?
Yes. I think for every parent, there comes a slightly terrifying moment when they realise their child is turning out a little bit like them. They might use the same words, the same phrase, but the same behaviours. And young people will do what they see their parents doing.
Mm-hmm. So that's why we need to put the phone away.
We need to put the phone down. We need to step away from it more often. It needs to be downstairs at night time. Phones do not belong in bedrooms under any circumstances. We need to buy alarm clocks or get them down from the attic or whatever we've done with them. And, you know, the main problem with this, Claire, is to do with individual well-being. Interestingly, there doesn't seem to have been an increase in violent crime in many developed countries, many rich countries, in line with social media, the way one might worry. But I think there is much greater individual anxiety and individual nervousness, maybe feelings of depression as well, as a result of this kind of hyperstimulation from social media.
So individual suffering as opposed to it changing what we're seeing on our streets or in our crime stats.
Yeah, it's quite interesting, because the Gardaí tell us that, crime rate has fallen by 7% in the last 5 years, and various other indices are improving as well. So I think what we're seeing mainly here, the negative effects are at the individual level, because the stress and responsibility placed on individuals now to curate what they're consuming is much greater than it ever was. Mm-hmm. And our bodies are primed to follow that story and to keep clicking. And this requires us to step back a little bit more.
Yeah. You see, there are some who would say, well, we have a duty as responsible citizens to watch what's happening in Gaza. You need to see that, as difficult as it can be. We have a duty to see what happened to Charlie Kirk so that we can make an assessment for ourselves about what happened. What do you say to that argument? Should we be watching this?
We have a duty to bear witness to the suffering of others and to stay informed about the state of the world, no matter how distasteful that is. We also have a duty to ourselves to remain well so that we can remain engaged and concerned citizens. It is about balancing those duties. Mm-hmm. So I think we both probably hear about people who look at the world and say, I am tuning out of the news. I'm not looking anymore. I'm retreating into my bubble. That is not a mentally healthy way to deal with this, because that is unsustainable. It is also unrealistic. So it is very much about balance. We need to be aware of what's happening in the world, the bad and the good, which doesn't get much mention. But we also have a responsibility to remain well, to be responsible consumers and responsible sharers of media, both for ourselves and for the younger generation.
Well, Nick has text us from Donegal, and Nick says, this is not very different from all the gory crime, drama and horror films with graphic violence that so many people enjoy watching for entertainment. Is it? Is it different?
Well, there is of the difference that this is reality. These are things that happen. And there is a small amount of evidence that watching fictional violence can do two things. It can normalise violence as something we expect to see in the world, but it can also produce this vicarious discharge of a desire to see violence. So it's kind of complex. It is a little bit different, but certainly the same advice goes for watching a lot of violent crime or gory crime. That again gets us all hyped up. We start responding as if we are present in the scene rather than if it's on the TV. Mm-hmm. And in some senses, that's why we watch it, because we crave this stimulation. And again, the advice is to step back from that. Of course, the difference with the streaming is that it's not real and it is time limited. You can binge, but there's only a finite amount of it.
Yes. I've just, when I think about how things have changed, I mean, I remember working in television as a reporter in the late 90s, early 2000s. And if you were editing a package, you weren't allowed to put a picture in there or a series of pictures that showed a needle going into an arm if you were doing a story about blood donation, for example. Mm-hmm. Imagine, I mean, things have changed so much. So quickly, haven't they?
And a great deal has changed for the better. We are now able to look things in the eye and look reality head on in a way that we were not. We are better informed, and various indices of well-being in the world are actually increasing over the past couple of decades. But this puts additional responsibility on the individual. And I think that is where we need to focus a little bit more.
Fascinating, Brendan. Thank you very much for coming in. Good to talk to you. That's Professor Brendan Kelly. Now, coming up later in the programme, the royals are awaiting Donald Trump's arrival at Windsor Castle. From what I can see, he's not there yet. He was supposed to be there at 10:45, so I don't know what he's up to, but we'll find out because Barry Lenehan is standing by for us at Windsor. Next, though, from being threatened with knives and syringes to daily shoplifting, the pharmacist dealing with crime on the shop floor.
Get in touch on WhatsApp 0870 32 32 32.